Sports Show presents House of Rugby.
Hello, my name is Moritz Rasnigul and you're all very welcome to House of Rugby. The 2024 Guinness Six Nations has drawn to a close and Ireland have been crowned champions for the second year running. Joining me in studio to look back at the final round of games and look ahead to what's around the corner for Ireland are James Downey and Lindsay Peat. You're both very welcome. James, it was a tricky enough encounter at the weekend, a nervy performance in parts from Ireland, but they have claimed the championship for the fifth time in 11 years and that's a massive achievement.
Look, it certainly is. I think coming into the game, we were all pretty disappointed about last week's game against England and how that turned out, and obviously took away our Grand Slam and the first ever back-to-back Grand Slam for us. But it's a case of job done, really, you know. And I know I've said that a couple of times and I've been on here, but it was they stumbled over the line, you could kind of say. But you got to give credit to the Scots. The defensive performance was superb. They made 233 tackles, I believe, double what Ireland put in. And yeah, we just about got there. I think things might have been a little bit different, perhaps, if we got a couple of, if the Tadhg Furlong, for me, that was a try. Yes. If that goes over, if you get these little things that go over, the game changes. But ultimately, they've got to be happy with where they got. They stumbled over. It was a nervy finish. It was a nervy end, but we got there.
Yeah, it wasn't a perfect performance, Lindsay. We were expecting a reaction from Ireland after being beaten by England last week, but the Scots were always going to come to Dublin fighting after Italy got the better of them. But why couldn't Ireland hit their straps in that first half?
I don't know. I'd say it was a couple of things. Like, I mean, Scotland come in, albeit they're very, very inconsistent, win, loss, you know, and that's probably the theme of them. They came in leading the stats on a team who hit dominant tackles, and that James just said it there. They worked extremely hard. They probably took a leaf out of Wales's book where they kind of targeted the breakdown. They weren't illegal, but they certainly slowed it first. So I think, look, being on the other side as a player, you want to bounce back, but you also then probably want to do everything very well. And you just are overthinking it, maybe, like even that turnover and Dan Sheehan being put into touch going down the blind side. They're just things we've never done. So you're just out of kilter, and sometimes it was a kick up the arse we needed against England, albeit that we didn't want to lose. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time of putting games together to get back on the saddle, get back on the horse, put confidence together. So I just think they were nervy. There was so much on the line for the final game, especially after that England result. And sometimes it just doesn't take one match to fix it. And look, being on the other side, and if you're in that playing group and you want to bounce back, you kind of really, you know, bring everyone in closer, and you're kind of giving two fingers to everyone outside, because it's very hard to just perform on the, you know, give up this performance just because everyone else on the outside of your circle is looking for it. You do intrinsically want it for yourself, but sometimes between pressure and nerves, just doesn't always come out. But I do agree, Tadhg Furlong's, how that wasn't a try is beyond me.
Yeah, they showed a lot more in the second half and played more direct rugby, and to their credit, they were determined and they showed grit to close it out at the end. And that's probably one learning that they took from last week, the way they closed out the game after Hugh Jones crossed the finish line.
Yeah, look, I think so. I think everyone was kind of heart in their mouth stuff when Hugh Jones got through so easily. That was pretty disappointing, you know. And I think, yeah, they saw the game, right, rightly enough. But I think it's like the group as a whole, it's the expectation outside, you know, that we all have as pundits, as people in the media, whoever it is, we expect Ireland to do so well and to kind of, yeah, nearly walk this, like, you know, we get over France and we're like, okay, well, this Irish team, we expect a Grand Slam out of them, you know. And it's amazing how far we've come as a nation from your 90s or your, you know, early days of success. And I'm sure the players feel that expectation, and that does filter down through into the squad, and there's nerves there. But yeah, look, it is, they're able to see out games. I'd expect them to be able to see out the game, you know. Scotland were looking for a first triple crown as well for since 1990, and you've got to give, as I say, credit to them. But this Irish side, even when they're not playing well, to be able to get over the line is a good sign of a very strong team, you know. And previously, if we play like that against Scotland, we'd be beaten. So I think credit to them for getting the job done.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do, to win back-to-back championships. This is the first time, or the third time ever, that Ireland have managed to do that. And when you look at how the form of other teams were after the World Cup and the amount of changes that Ireland had in their team as well, like, it really is a huge achievement that should be celebrated.
Hugely. And like, there's a couple of things on this. Scotland came to town looking for a triple crown. Scotland came to town on the back of only beating Ireland once, which was back in what, in Croke Park in
2010, was it?
Yeah, around then. So to only win one out of 10 matches against that, you know, Irish opposition is not something they would have been proud of. They obviously lost in Rome last week against a very, very improved Italy team again. So they came here for pride. So there was a lot on, we're not giving them credit about what motivation they had coming to Dublin last weekend. And I think as well, there was the 36-0 ahead in the World Cup pool game where we put them to bed early. So, I mean, there was lots of wounds that we left, you know, we inflicted on Scotland. So they came to town to want to be the ones to emulate England last week and put one of the top teams in the world, you know, down to another defeat. But in the modern game of any sport, a professional sport, it is so hard. Like, Scotland are all full-time professional players. They're not just a poor team. Like Gregor Townsend and his backroom staff would have done their homework. They would have looked at how Ireland struggled last week. And, you know, teams are picked apart. So also, I think, is this Pete O'Mahony, that question, Conor Murray, a couple of players probably stepping away after a really successful World Cup. And they do speak about how enjoyable the setup is. Same with Keane Healy. Like, it seems to be a lovely environment in. So even to leave people who are friends and everything like that in the end of a championship. So I think there was a lot of contributing factors to last week on top of the pressure of winning back to back. And again, like, this team are setting new records. Like, they've 19 straight home wins. Like, again, that's a new stat in itself. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing for us is whether they stumble upon the line. This is if Ireland want to be successful on a broader scale, whether that's tours down to South Africa or, you know, anyone we get in the lines or eventually in the next World Cup cycle, it's those really crappy wins. Like, if we were to look at a Premier League season or even the URC or the European Cup, there will be teams who win, who lift that trophy at the end of the season, and they will have a purple patch. They will stumble over results and just get over the line against games they should have lost. And that's a sign of really, really good teams. And look, that's a thing I'd like to be chatting about rather than, you know, oh, we threw away that championship, or we didn't, you know, finish it after being the deserving team. So, look, it's a sign of where we've turned a corner and where Andy Farrell has brought this team, you know, really upper echelons of world rugby.
Yeah, consistency is probably the trademark of this team now, that they're able to back up performances week on week. And we saw in the past 2 weeks that England and Scotland defensively really put it up to Ireland. Have teams started to figure us out?
I don't know if they've figured this out. I think there's a bit of an evolution of the game plan as well that has to happen. I think what you show over the past couple of weeks, that teams can see certain patterns happening, and you can kind of, by the time you get to the end of a championship, you're able to kind of put a defensive system in place to deal with that. I think they, as Lindsay said, they do the analysis, and you see Scotland would have done the homework on how teams defend. And maybe would have kept people on their feet, or attack the breakdown just to slow it down and see how Ireland cope. And Ireland know that that's going to happen. And this is where the evolution of what they're going to do in the summer, say, perhaps. And if teams do that, what do they do? And what's their plan B? And that's the exciting thing, that we need to be able to kind of flip if we can and go back, revert to type then if we have to, and get quick ball. And if we're not getting quick ball, what do we do? And look, it's a case of, teams also have to defend it and try and stop it. And if they can't stop it and they've really gone for it, it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing for a team to kind of come back with. So, look, I'm pretty happy with how they went, you know. And look, England did show if they are physical, if they do match up, how do we do it? There's questions there, I guess. But and I'm certain there's going to be massive questions, I think, in the summer. South Africa is going to be such a huge animal. I'm sure we'll talk about it. It's going to be something really exciting in terms of a challenge for that side, challenge for the coaching group. And also as well, I think we haven't mentioned it, is like, that's Andy Farrell's last Six Nations. So till 26. So, you know, there's, like, we talk about, what we're going to do, we missed out in the Grand Slam, but what a side to do that, you know. And we do kind of sometimes get carried away with more success. And we eat it up so quickly. But this group have been phenomenal, you know, and given great excitement, and it's hopefully only going to get better.
That's it. We'll touch on South Africa a bit later on, but picking up on James's point there about Andy Farrell, everyone speaks about this environment that he has created, and you call him Faz yourself. You're in with Andy. But they used 32 players this championship, and it's just, it's a great step up for these players that they're learning at the highest level, and he's building this depth the whole time, and none of them looked off the mark.
No, let's take Calvin Nash, for example. Do you know, it wasn't too long ago, he's on the emerging tour, then he's looking for consistency with Munster, then he's finally getting an opportunity in an Irish camp, and he started all five games. And I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, again, Andy Farrell doesn't sugarcoat if lads are performing and they deserve their opportunity and they're performing in camp, then they get their opportunity. And, you know, that's an exciting time for players to know that they have an opportunity and they're rewarded, you know, for the performances. Even the fact that, you know, their celebrations looking on media where they're singing Oasis, you know, the stadium's empty and they're in their suits and they just look like a group that get on so well. I mean, you can't buy that. Like, you can't magic that, you know, that has to grow organically. Then he's in Keown. He looks like one of the players. Like, he's in great shape. He could probably still play himself, you know. So it's just a lovely environment. But he's also, I think, I would hope they take opportunity now when they do go to South Africa, not only to just pick up on James's point with, you know, when teams are picking you apart, you can't really change an awful lot within a championship. So they probably look at over the summer now. Look at how we can improve, how we can play against bigger teams and no better opposition than South Africa. But I would also hope that the likes of Kieran Frawley probably come in into more heated games, that he would get opportunity to kind of really develop over that time. And then lads who are on the fringes, I'd love to see Thomas O'Hearn. I'd love to see Ryan Barrett get a starting berth to really, he's done really well off the bench, but is he worthy of a starting spot? We'll see. So it'll be a nice idea to kind of play around with that next layer of young talent coming up and really expose them, because you don't know where players are at until they're at Test Rugby. And I'm not sure I'd want to be pitched against South Africans as one of my first Test matches, but you know, that's the, if you can survive at that top level, then you'll definitely survive.
Yeah, and Andy Farrell has really driven those standards, like he said himself. Jack Crowley in the media, maybe we're too nice to him, but that he has set this bar for him and wants him to keep improving. And he had a brilliant championship. When you think of all the talk about life post Johnny Sexton coming into this championship, the fact that he played, didn't he play every minute? Yeah. And he carried that team, really.
Yeah, and testament to him as a person to be able to carry that, because he would have known coming into that there is that expectation, and Johnny's gone and who can step into his boots, and that's a lot of pressure, you know, and everyone would have been looking at him and looking at fine detail of every single decision he makes. And, you know, I think was it against France, he kicks the ball through and it goes dead and it was like, oh, wrong decision, and what's he doing there? And it's easy to point the finger at someone like him, but I think he showed that he's stronger than that, and he's not afraid of to constantly keep trying things. If something doesn't work, dust himself off, goes back again and doesn't stop trying, which is great, you know. And
he owns it, doesn't he?
He completely does, you know, and he has a go, and that's what you want as a 10, and you don't want him to shrink, be a shrinking violet, and in the face of adversity to slip back. No one wants that, and you want your 10, especially when you've had someone, like, you've been blessed, you know, when you've someone like Johnny Sexton been there. But I thought he was superb, had a superb Six Nations, and he was one of the few people who played every single minute. And again, on Lindsay's point again, there was like five debutants in the Six Nations. And just for me, it's about the depth, you know, it's that tier, that group just below your normal starters, you know, because if you get a couple of injuries, who else steps in? Okay, we saw Jordan Larmour at the weekend, and he might have popped into many people's heads, but all of a sudden he's there, and it's like, okay, if that happens, we need to be ready. And especially going out to such a physical place as South Africa, it's going to be a very tough tour down there, and you're going to need squad depth, and it's a great chance for players to show they can do.
Yeah, and Andy Farrell, he's always embraced adversity, and when things go wrong, he looks at it as an opportunity. And he said post-match, even after beating Scotland and winning the championship, that he thinks it's a good thing that they were beaten by England, because this group have, the younger players probably, have become so used to winning that the learning is in when they get beaten.
Yeah, and you have to stay hungry, you know, as a collective and as individuals, because it becomes mundane, becomes monotonous. There's no excitement, there's no intrinsic motivation for you to get better and challenge yourself if teams aren't really putting it up to you. And I think it was a nice slap in the face of reality. And we all need that. And it's not to sound negative, it wasn't ideal, the timing of the loss, because, you know, to do back-to-back Grand Slams would have been absolutely historic, and everyone wished that for that, excuse me, group of players. But I think what I love about Andy Farrell is he's so pragmatic. Like, he looks at every outcome as an opportunity, and the biggest learnings are actually from losses rather than winnings. I know there is, you always review and you look at what you could have done better, but there's no better learnings than from losses. And I say that always, some of my best learnings, even though I would have rathered a few more wins, came on the back of losses, because you do have to dust yourself off. You have to look at yourself, what could I have done better? And, you know, then you motivate yourself to be better the next time you go out. So I think also this England team, we were waiting for them to really crack on, and they're probably going to be the team of the next probably 12 to the next couple of years if they can continue on what they've hopefully clicked on. They were probably unlucky against France, and we'll speak about it in a few minutes. But yeah, that's what I love about Andy Farrell. He keeps his players grounded. There's no bullshit. There's no plamas. And like, you know, we could have won. We won games, I'd say, even against Wales, though we won, and we won well, really. There was probably areas he probably absolutely lambasted them about. And that's what he does. That's what he pushes the standards. That's the feedback from a lot of players, even on Lions Tour when he was the defensive coach. Like, he would read the riot act, because I would think he abides by the same standards he puts on his own players. Do you know, that was the man he was, and that's the what he expects of his players. So he fascinates me, I have to say, and I'm excited to see now what he'll do with the Lions team.
Well, speaking of players and coaches that set standards, Peter O'Mahony, we're only speculating that he has played his final game in an Irish jersey, a warrior, a leader from the moment he started playing rugby, and such an influence on this group of players.
Yeah, massively so. And yeah, if it is, it's all the speculation at the moment of if it is his last time in an Irish shirt. The temptation for him, I guess, has got to be that to finish of as an Irish player, captain, down in South Africa with a tour win would be unbelievable way to finish. But look, not many players get to finish the way they want to finish, you know, and on a high and winning the Six Nations. And if he does, right off into the sunset, look, he's been what a stalwart. Was lucky enough to share the dressing room with him at Munster when he was brought on as captain as well. And he's just one of these players who leads by actions, and you see what he does. And he's been superb for everything he's done in red, and sure, he's going to have more time hopefully in the red and in green if he finishes, so be it. But what a way to go out for someone like that, you know, and deserves all the plaudits.
Yeah, he could have more miles on the clock. Maybe we're writing him off too soon, but the way the players speak about him shows the respect they have for him. Even Ryan Baird, who's fighting for the same jersey as him, he said consistency is O'Mahony's friend, and that he's been an idol to him since he started playing rugby as well.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be at the match on Saturday, and I actually watched an embrace with Ryan Baird and Peter O'Mahony. And I watch all the embraces because you can kind of see how maybe the relationship between players, and there was kind of a bit of chat amongst them, and it showed, I took it that the interaction was just the respect actually both players have for Peter O'Mahony, for the huge man mountain and athlete that Ryan Baird is, and how much he probably be pushed him, and also then from Ryan Baird how much he enjoys chasing him. So I suppose I noticed Hugo Keenan in just the snippets we saw of him warming up, and he had tears in his eyes, and I watched an embrace with O'Mahony, whether that was because he was captain and he was trying to console him, him being on the cover of the match programme. It's just too much really for me to say that he's going to stay on with Ireland. And I think probably, and I speak from my own experience, there comes a time where you just know it's the right time to walk into the sunset, because you've left on a high, and what a high he has left on, but into where he has left that jersey and improved it even more from who wore it before him. So that's all you can do in the jersey, and I think he's etched his passion, his blood, his sweat, his tears in that number six jersey, and he has left a legacy that people will only need to try and follow and surpass if they can. I do think he's more miles than the clock in a Munster jersey, and I certainly do hopefully see him on the next and the Lions in 12 months' time if he can survive that. But I think, yeah, my gut feeling is it's probably his time now to...
And what a way to end it.
What a way. Exactly. And you know what? Maybe take opportunity to say thanks for everything. A huge congratulations to him. He's been absolutely immense. And do you know what? The testament didn't when people are... I know he was probably giving out telling them to buzz off when they lifted his jersey, but the bit of crack and they tried to kind of annoy him, I think they do get good mileage out of him. So it's testament again of the man he is, and just to see him and his family and his kids and his wife after was lovely.
I think as well, we never mentioned it before, that probably would have bought into the week as well, a small bit in the background with Conor Murray,
you know,
and simmering away like questions, and they might have, like, he was asked during the week a hell of a lot about it, you know, is this your last game, and you don't want to take away from that. Maybe that was the way they wanted to be, as selfless players. Sorry, I'm dragging Conor Murray into this, but like with Pete, he just wanted to be about the team and then kind of let things settle maybe, and then perhaps have an announcement. But as I say, if that's the case, what a way to go out. And like, it really is, for someone to be able to kind of choose when to go out, it's so lucky to be able to do that, because you look at 95% of players, maybe more, they can't. It just finishes. Even Johnny Sexton, we're going to have his last couple of games, injury, bang, done, and it's forgotten about, and you move on, you know, and it's ruthless, and that's the sport. But hopefully,
even his time at Leinster, he didn't get to do that. He's lucky enough at the World Cup,
And you had maybe O'Driscoll was the one who got the biggest one, you know. But if he got an injury, then it's finished. And same with Rog and Paul O'Connell, and just finished and done. And if he can do that in front of a crowd, deserves it.
Absolutely. Well, before we round up the other matches, a word on Scotland. It feels all too familiar. They go in with expectation, they go in with confidence, and it was another underachievement for them.
It is, considering, like, you know, the likes of Glasgow and Edinburgh are actually performing. You know, Finn Russell is doing immensely at Bath, who are flying the flag there. So it's, they've such fabulous players, but Finn Russell probably wasn't in it. We knew he'd be key to it. Was a little bit out of sorts. Same with Van der Murphy. He had a kind of like hands on the hips moment on the wing. He didn't get an awful lot of ball. When he did, thankfully we smothered him.
It's clear they focused so much on the defensive side.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, they were dominant tackles, but they didn't turn Ireland over. Like, if you look at Ireland, when we turned the ball over for Gary Ringrose, it's absolutely unbelievable line break. I was like, how is he so fast? I can understand why he's on the wing now, but, you know, they didn't use all that dominance on the defensive side and all that hard work to kind of put Ireland in under pressure on the attack side. Like, if you're going to, for me personally, my thoughts are, if you're going to put so much pressure on, like, a lot of teams thrive on their attack from turnover ball on the defensive side, but they don't seem to use that. They just want to disrupt and make it just be a pain in the arse, really. But they didn't feed off that. They can at times, and they had done in previous matches, but again, they just do not do it consistently.
Is there a mental frailty there that they can't get these performances together, that they can't see it through?
There's got to be something there, and I think there's got to be questions asked as well in the background of, like, Gregor's been there a fair amount now and things haven't really moved on. In this Scotland team, where a generational team, in inverted commas, when they had Stuart Hogg there, and you know, Scotland were really pushing the side forward. Look, I know that they've kind of flipped and said that we're arrogant Irish, and that they were supporting England ahead of we were playing them, and my head, that one's turned. But it's interesting for them. They just really haven't kicked on or found a gear or found consistency, and that just goes to show even more so how lucky we are to have that consistent side. But Scotland, just at sixes and sevens, they can produce kind of one-off games, but to do it over a short period of time and week in, week out, it's too hard for them to do.
Yeah, and it's just another disappointing championship for them. Looking at the team of the tournament, really, Italy, amazing. They had their best ever Six Nations finish, 2 wins and a draw after receiving the wooden spoon in the last 8 championships. And we're all delighted for Italy, because Italy have now come to the party, and Ireland are the only team that really put it up to them this championship.
Italy were mind-blowingly fabulous. Everything you expect from Italians, their passion, their flair. I think they got tried around there. Their fullback scored against, like, it came from a set piece play, and it was just magic. Their running lines were perfect. Their offloads were, I mean, pinpoint and just on the point of possibly being turned over, and like the Welsh player defenders committing and in the go, and even the footwork to change their running line. They're just a different team, and they're absolutely fabulous to watch. And I felt so sorry for them at the World Cup, nearly to the point of being frustrated and annoyed with them. Like, you know, you are better than this, as much as you're not world class rugby team, or you're not renowned for your rugby prowess or anything like that. I just thought they were brilliant, and I was excited to watch, and only that it overlapped with our own game. You know, I would have sat there and watched them all day. I think they were so much value for money, and I'm delighted to see, and I hope it's just not the change of, in coach. They have some absolutely phenomenal players. Their under-20s were exceptional as
That's it. They've performed so well underage for years, and I think now they're just bearing the fruits of all that hard work.
Yeah, thank God. And we can see that. I want to keep going calling him Lemoncello, but Menoncello, like, he's just been unbelievable. Ioane has just, again, kind of fed off that, because he's, you know, he is standout on his own as a winger, but, like, he just has now other players around him. Lamaro, the captain, absolutely made shit, excuse my language, of anyone who could get his hands off in every round. And I just thought he was, from the man who was putting his hand up nearly in tears being subbed during the World Cup, to now see him absolutely drive his team forward and lift that trophy against Scotland. To be honest, I was quite emotional. I really have to say, they definitely got into my heart, and I'm a, you know, a little soft spot for Italy.
I think everyone does. What's the main thing do you think James Quesada has done with this side now from Kieran Crowley's reign?
Oh, look, I think it's... Yeah, you hope it's not just the change in coach, because that wouldn't reflect too great.
They're more
the players.
Pragmatic though, yeah, with their performance.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they would be a little bit. But I also agree with Lindsay in that it's the under 20s that have come through, and it's probably since Conor O'Shea was there in his time and he went over, and Steve Abboud, who installed these, regimes, I guess. Underage rather than just going in to try and fit the structures than just trying to deal with the senior team. He went in and said, right, okay, let's start underage, bring them through. And beforehand, the teams are doing well under 20s, coming into seniors. And when you get used to getting hammered every week, it becomes a habit then, and it's hard to break that cycle. And I think these teams are much stronger mentally as well as physically. And a couple of wins, it's amazing what it does. And that's the confidence within the side. They don't just rely on one or two players. It's pretty good players across the park within that. And they probably should, they should have beaten the French as well, you know. And geez, imagine now, what a tournament. And I really, really hope that it's not just a flash in the pan. I know that they have been pretty consistent with it, but, you know, need them to back it up next season and not just have it 1 year and go, okay, great, and revert the type. It's keep that going and put the pressure on, because look, Wales seem a bit of a basket case at the moment. And after they played Ireland, I was kind of like, okay, well, I'm sure we'll come on to Wales, but you were kind of going, okay, they did okay, there's work there they can do. But yeah, that's just
talk about Wales now. What's going on there? Like, they've picked up the wooden spoon for the first time since 2003. Warren Gatland handed in his resignation after that game, offered to hand it in. They refused it. They want him to stay on. I agree with James that we saw flashes in the first few rounds of endeavour from Wales and what they were trying to do, but they fell off a bit and at the weekend and probably the week before as well. I mean, it's a complete rebuild. They will need time and support, but on the flip side, they'll need to win games to get that financial boost to put the structures in place. So they're in a difficult situation.
They are, but It's not a surprise to people. I mean, we would have been talking on this show last year about what state the Welsh regions were in. They were losing games in the URC, their club teams, you know, week in, week out. So this isn't just, you know, an overnight thing. This has been, unfortunately, when you don't, and we've just spoke about Wales on the flip side, that, you know, they had obviously their centres and their underage associated with Benetton and Zebre, and then they're under 20. So that you have a conveyor belt. We're very lucky here in the schools rugby here. And the other, you know, we've just come off the back of the All Ireland Skills Cup, so we've a production line of players, thankfully, but Wales have let that fall by the wayside, and all the players underneath their professional setups, unfortunately, they haven't been nurtured that. So this isn't a surprise to me. I'm glad Warren Gatland didn't resign, because to be honest, I was impressed with Wales. We knew they were going to get the wooden spoon prior to the tournament. We would be very surprised. It was more so could Italy be formed rather than Wales just not performing. I was impressed with what inexperience they had there, that they actually put performances together. I think the demands of the championship, unfortunately, for any young team who are inexperienced, was going to just bite them in the backside towards the end. I think that's just what happened. There's so much motivation and pressure on you, and it takes so much energy out of you. So by the end of a championship, whether you're on the top of that leaderboard or on the bottom, every team is going to be struggling, and it comes down to, thankfully, Ireland had depth and we just got over the line, and that's where kind of probably the consistency and the depth got us over, whereas Wales didn't have that luxury. So I think right now Warren Gatland needs to work his magic with that group of players who deserve that. I think they really showed pride in their jersey. They really stood up well. They were unfortunate with results. Yeah, they fell off, but they did show glimpses for me that there's potential there. But now they have to just put the love in the regions and really, I mean, throw everything they can at it to try and buy them a bit of time, because I think that the changeover, which is never easy for such a wealth of experience and a playing group that brought them so much success, they probably outstayed their welcome, which is hard. It probably sounds rootless for me, but on a World Cup cycle, it probably should have happened before the World Cup cycle, or else you had to wait till after, and they've waited till after, and they just now have to really look at this rebuild. It's the start of a World Cup cycle. It's nothing to panic about. You just have to be not so demanding on yourself and have so much expectation. But I think there's potential there, and that's the exciting part for Wales.
So is it just time in the saddle for these players and patience from fans, that it will come together, especially if Warren Gatland stays at the helm.
Yeah, I think so. I think if other teams have done it before, and England would normally do it a lot, and once that post-World Cup, they'll have a bit of a clear out, and they were pretty big in their clear out Wales. But I certainly think that more time together, a couple of wins, like it's year one, we don't, as Irish, with the RFU, they don't really look at it in that kind of 4-year cycle, because we go hard to the Six Nations all the time. We don't rebuild, and in that sort of way, we try and bring players through each year. I think Wales will go, right, 4-year cycle, let's go. These players in 4 years' time will have 20, 30 caps, and they'll be so experienced come that time, and that's their time to shine. That's when they'll be judged. I'm just trying to think if Wales are touring Australia this year in the summer or not. I think
they have South Africa in June.
Okay, yeah. Ouch. Okay, lovely. I thought Australia might be the worst place to go down to, you know, to kind of try and get your confidence back. But yeah,
that's the other side though, isn't it? Teams won't want to play them. They won't get good quality in between them. Sorry.
Absolutely. But it's I just think that time and saddle, they will come together, you know, and look, the club rugby scene in Wales is very in turmoil. So it's hard then to come into a Welsh camp and have that positivity as well. And obviously when you take defeat, it's a bruised egos, it's tough, you got to lift it, and that's up to the coaches then and the management staff to lift it and bring standards. And I think it's a case of more game time, hopefully get a couple of wins. Once they get that first win,
yeah,
they'll all buy in. It's that extra little bit of buy-in. Yeah, we see what we're can do and see what we're doing. We see where we're trying to go.
We did see it in flashes in the first few rounds.
And it's just that, like, it's that consistency word that we mentioned the whole time. And it's great to be able to do that. But if you're going to attack, right, you have to defend too, you know. And it's Scotland. If you're going to defend, flip side, you have to attack. So just getting that balance right, you know. It's putting your heart on the line is all well and good, but you need more than that.
They just concentrate on the fence though. And that's all you could do going into that championship when you have such a brand new team. You can only fix one thing at a time. I mean, if Warren Gatland and his backroom staff were to kind of say, right, let's fix it all at once, I'd say they would have been absolutely trounced in every game. Whereas they set their stall out, they had huge clarity, very impressed with their defensive setup. And you could see that in the Irish game, the amount of players they still had on their feet. Their chop tackling was, if anybody wants to prove their chop tackling, we talk about Will Connors, but I have to say I was so impressed with the fundamentals of Wales's tackling, and you could see the amount of time they put into that. And they were dominant hits, and when you've dominant hits and putting an opposition back in the game line, winning that game line battle, you really are giving yourself an opportunity. It's just that they didn't really have much attack, but mind you, they had some really cheeky moments where they got some great tries, whether that's, you know, exploiting
Dwyer,
the pillar.
So quick on the wing.
Do you know what? He is brilliant, but he's exploded onto the scene, and he hasn't really disappointed. So this, look, I have no doubt there's big days to come in the Welsh jerseys. I suppose we're talking about a 4-year cycle for them to really measure where they're at. The good thing for any of the Six Nations team is they have high quality test matches year in, year out, you know, and that's good. In between that now, it's what Warren Gatland does for camps, and more so getting them absolute test games to measure themselves at, because it's those mistakes and those harsh learnings that we look about, and I think they need to accelerate the harsh learnings, unfortunately. So it's going to be a tough old time for them, but no doubt that we can hopefully see a little bit of sunshine in Welsh rugby in the next little while.
Well, on to France and England. I'm sure there's plenty of sunshine after the week, after the weekend. A very entertaining game. France finished second after beating England, and if there are another few weeks left in the Six Nations, who knows, because those two teams, they seem to be hitting their straps now.
Yeah, certainly. And we talk about Wales there and getting that time and fixing one things. And you can see when England fix one or two things, how good they can be. And at the start of the Six Nations, it was like, what way are we trying to play? What are we trying to do? And all of a sudden now, within 5 and 6 week period, it's we know what we're trying to do now. And all of a sudden, the evolution is there. And Felix Jones is lauded as this defensive, you know, but it's all in a couple of weeks, and what a game it was. It was nice to see England get a bit of a last minute reprieve there. It's Thomas Ramos. I was very happy with that one going over. That took plenty of abuse the week before from English people. But I don't know, defensive coaches might have been scratching their heads a little bit, but quite a game of rugby to finish it as well. And
high
octane pick hits got on there, and some wonderful flashes of brilliance from both sides. I think France would be very disappointed though in looking back on how their Six Nation went ultimately. You know, I think Galtier would have been under serious pressure, especially if they'd lost Italy. Probably looking at the way the French go, might have got the chop if that had happened. And But can this one win against England be a turning point for the side? Perhaps, you know, it was a hell of a long hangover for the French side from the World Cup, and maybe this last game, as you say, a couple more weeks, what would have happened?
Yeah, absolutely. Galtier said it was the Six Nations from hell, and Sean Edwards was saying that they have a lot to improve on. Where do you stand on France now?
I still think
DuPont and Entomac have to come back into
they
that
have to come
team.
In, but Legarreck was absolutely. I mean, he was brilliant. He is unbelievable, and how he didn't start the championship a little bit sooner, like his pass against was it Wales, the behind the back pass kick off the attack was unbelievable. And I think if France were actually guilty of anything, it's just probably not taking opportunity when they did make changes for some of their upcoming. A very young centre who came in as well.
Deportier.
Like he was excellent against Wales as well. So I think if they're guilty of anything, it's just not taking a chance. And if you had have said 2 weeks ago that France were going to finish second, I mean, we all probably held around the table laughing, because they just did not show signs of that. Even that was a tongue twister. But I think they just need to now really start to probably layer, because they really had the DuPont effect.
It
was a hangover from him leaving rather than World Cup, I think. Do you know, and we saw his brilliance in the sevens. Like, I think people question him, but I think people also questioned the impact he has on his team, and I think we saw that. But I have to say, Legarreck, I was hugely impressed for a man so young. I know he's racing and 21, but you know, he got tries, he wasn't afraid to take responsibility, and I just thought he brought something different to France, and he probably should have been in a little bit sooner. And that's probably the only thing I would say they're guilty of. We always expect petulance on these, you know, the French to throw their toys out of the pram, because that's how fabulous they are, you know, that whether we're talking about sport or them personally, and that's what they bring to a tournament. But look, they finished second, they'll be very happy with it, and I think now again just look to rebuild. But yeah, test the young players. Like, the top 14 is one of the most exciting leagues in the world, and we see that when they see them in European competition as well. So take chances on those young French players, and definitely take the summer to build your layers, because I think competition breeds success and it pushes players on. And I think when they lose players that are big names, you know, they shouldn't have to have such a downward spiral on that.
Yeah, the pressure seems to be off a bit now that they won that last game. England, they stopped Ireland from winning the Grand Slam in impressive form. Are you seeing what they're building now? And do you think the pressure is off them in a way as well?
It's amazing what a win can do. Do you know what I mean? Before the Irish game, I was kind of struggling with it a little bit to see how he was going to evolve that game of the kicking and having someone at George Ford playing 10 versus a Marcus Smith, and the way he played at Leicester, coached at Leicester, and that transition, he took this England team in the World Cup, and obviously it was a short term and he couldn't change too much, but like you'd expected him to now in this reign to kind of try and implement something else. First few weeks didn't see it. Bits starting to come in. I guess, look, everyone's buying themselves a bit of time too with the everything takes 16 weeks or 16 games to embed. So that's nice. You know, it's people aren't expecting instant success with things. But yeah, maybe they'll be happier kind of towards the end, the last two games, albeit losing to the French, but played a bit better, better brand of rugby as well. But still, it just goes to show how important George Ford is for them. I don't think they can push him to the side and just play this running rugby with Marcus Smith. I think he was very calm, George Ford, and controlled things.
Well,
yeah, exactly. And I just think he knows what to do in the right place, right time. Had an air of calmness. And I think a few people were losing their heads around him. He just seemed to go, no, let's not get caught up in a game against France, and played as jouer and thrown everything around. They just bang, kick when we had to kick, play when we had to play. And it's to get the balance right, and I think maybe slowly getting there.
Yeah, worrying for Ireland if we are looking ahead to next year's Six Nations, but great for the competition if we have a competitive England and France.
Oh, look, the competition needed those hiccups, or those, I suppose, unexpected wins and losses and performances, and you couldn't take your eyes off, you know, to end the championship, you couldn't take your eyes off England and France. And I think I do agree with James. I think for any team to play that high octane style of rugby, there has to be this calm brains, and that is where George Ford comes in. And it's about game management, is when to really pick up the speed, is when to slow it down, when to kick to territory, when to look at your set piece, when you're in the green zone, what are your options. So Definitely more exciting stuff. Alex Mitchell, I was very impressed with the speed of Rook. Obviously, Finn Smith is to come in there and add an addition. And yeah, I think the partnerships and the Henry Slade and the performances he was putting in Europe for Leicester, you know, we kind of saw glimpses as when Ollie Lawrence as well, when he came in to partner him in centre, we saw that what they're capable of. But yeah, I think it's nothing but good for the competition, because again, we never know in the Northern Hemisphere how we pitch against the Southern Hemisphere. Like, we always go by the Six Nations, but I think the better the competition, the Six Nations for us, the more adaptable we are to conquer the Southern Hemisphere nations when we get to the big 4-year stage of the World Cups. Because, you know, and especially with England bringing that physicality, you know, we need teams to match the South Africans and the New Zealands and the Australias of this world that we can actually compete with them, and Argentina as well, who bring huge physicality. So it's nice to have not only that high octane rugby like a basketball match, it's nice to have the physicality as well that you expect from usually the Southern Hemisphere teams.
Well, Ireland will be focused on the Southern Hemisphere now. Next, they have a very exciting few months ahead and a better challenge they couldn't ask for against the world champions in South Africa. What are you expecting from this tour?
It's going to be interesting on field, and I'm sure off field even more so, with Rassie's going to be having some headlines. Look, what a nail biter
there as well.
Absolutely. Look, what a nail biter. Oh, of course, yeah, you know, and he's learning his Afrikaans, and yeah, he'd be a busy boy. Yeah.
Good morning.
It's all over. I thought it was an Italian accent.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Yeah. Damn it, yeah. I haven't learned Italian now.
But it's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be quite a challenge. I think a lot of South Africans, if you know any, are not too happy with everyone saying that Ireland's the best team in the world against the world champions. They're world champions for a reason. They know how to play tournament rugby and they can win games. And look, it's a great challenge. What a challenge. And it's going to be a tough challenge, I think, you know, I really do. If players move on, going down there as opposed to playing them up here, it's very different, you know. And as you say, what a challenge it is for this group to go down and pit themselves against the world champions. And if you can get down there and get a result, it's nearly like the old New Zealand, going down to New Zealand to try and get that result. If you can get that monkey off your back, it's huge. And to do it down there, as I say, in the volatile crowd, it'll be pretty harsh going for everyone. It's going to be a long time down there, and you just hope that the players aren't too fatigued. We saw them kind of stumble. Right,
yeah, they
players
did look tired.
Will
the
they?
Past
will
two
they?
Weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And will they get a break? And will he change? Will some players want to rest? Well, not they won't want to rest, but will they try and rest some players? And it'll be tough.
Yeah, that's the question. How will Andy Farrell approach this now? Will we see the frontline players travelling, or will he leave some players at home and try to give younger players, uncapped players, a chance?
It's a nice balance you'll have to strike, actually, because you want the experience so that you can perform, but you obviously want to expose the younger players to that test match rugby and the experience even on field, like we spoke about George Ford there. But you have to, and the Piero Mani, that will be a big loss to have that experience head, to be able to speak to referees, to know what to expect to bring to opposition like the South Africans, who will have, it's hugely hostile. They absolutely are mad about their rugby. They're so passionate, especially on home soil. It will definitely bring a sharper edge, shall we say. But the other flip side is not that it's not a positive playing, but the other positive side is that you want younger players getting into this bubble when you go on tour, and you kind of get to strip back and actually see the personalities. So to really immerse yourselves and get that buy in, mm-hmm. and players are going to step out, or players probably need a rest. It'll depend really on how the provinces do in the European competition, how long they go in, and players like bodies will need rest. So it'll be interesting to see the senior players who he brings, but I don't think he can afford to kind of go really like new edge that everyone's new with very inexperienced, because we have to be performing as well. And I think they would, going into the Lions Den, as we say, it would be pretty daunting now for some young players who don't have a lot of test rugby under their belts at an international level.
Andy Goodman will be coming in, I expect, during the summer as well. How will Andy Farrell want the team to evolve on field with their performances?
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting point. You know, I think obviously Mike Katz put his own little stamp on it, and then I think Andy Goodman coming in is going to be very good for the attack structure, I think. But I think he knows the players. He knows, not that Mike Katz didn't, but he had to learn it. I think he knows all these young players, what they're capable of, who's coming through. And they've been pretty successful Leinster since he's been there. So I think he'll be bringing hopefully a bit more tempo as well. And if he can work out how to beat these physical sides, you know, and how to get a, evolve that game plan that they're already starting to get a hold of. Look, ultimately, I think it's going to be Andy Farrell who's going to dictate this is the style of play and how we want to do it. And maybe he'll bring in some individual ideas himself, which can hopefully unlock a few doors. Obviously, being a Southern Hemisphere coach himself, we can do that.
Yes. What areas, though, do you think? Like, I suppose we're talking about depth here. I'm kind of thinking the front row, probably. Like, are we looking at what's Keane Healy's job? We probably need another loose head. We definitely probably need another tight. Like, the front row probably need a good bit of exposure. No better place to go than South Africa. Is Tom Ahern going again? Is Sam Prendergast not Keane? But we probably, the two Prendergast brothers, they probably need a run. Definitely Keane has done
Ross
an awful
Byrne
lot.
As well. He'll be back.
Ross Byrne needs to be back in. How is Harry? Still not sold on Harry myself, but is that because he hasn't got enough time both at Leinster and international? Is he someone who can build consistently and go in? I certainly think now we can't rest on our laurels with 10, so it'd be interesting to see from a 10 position full back Hugo Keenan. We saw there, I think Jordan Lammer probably underperformed, but at the same time, like, poor chap has been playing the wing for Leinster.
He was thrown in there,
absolutely thrown the deep end, so we definitely need a full back. So then does Frawley come in? Or because I was interested to see, you know, I definitely thought at some point then Crowley would, you know, with Harry on the bench, Crowley would go to fullback and Harry would come in. So I think definitely whatever about the personnel, probably for me would be looking at the positions of where we need to deepen. And certainly probably fullback 10, 9 as well then if Connor's going to step away. And then obviously Connor comes in like that George Ford and he controls games, whereas Craig Casey and James Gibson Park, who was fantastic, his rugby brain is ridiculous. We need to look at nines then as well. So there's kind of a couple of areas where you're like, right, we're fine for now, but if we're to go forward and for this tour, we
now's
need
the
to deepen
chance
it.
To build depth. Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see from those positions, especially front row, hooker as well. I think I actually think Ronan Keller he really made an impact when he came on, and I think he was one of the few who had 100%. Well, up until the England match, I think he definitely had 100% success rate in his throws. He was physical, he's not afraid to get in and stuck in. But it's probably then again, if you have the two lads injured at one point, who's coming in as hooker for you? So yeah, be interesting to see now a couple of lads.
And before we finish up and move on from the Six Nations, looking back at Ireland's performances, what was the highlight for you, James?
I don't know really. I'm trying to think of anything jumping out on me now. I suppose, look, Jack Crowley's performance at 10, I think given pressure, external pressure probably more so, and how well he stood up and adapted to taking the mantle off Johnny Sexton, how well he can control things. He's got to be happy with that. Maybe the 5 debutants, Joe McCarthy was pretty impactful in that. Thought he was great to have more competition in that area and someone of that physique as well to cause a bit of damage. But yeah, look, ultimately it's great to get the win in the Six Nations, but just those two players, I suppose, of really coming through.
Where did you see the most improvement from the World Cup, or where did you see Ireland evolve? Or did you?
Yeah, well, the evolution is probably that there wasn't just this big drop down from some of the players we lost. I mean, James mentioned Jack Crowley there to come in and fill Johnny Sexton's shoes. As we spoke about, it's one thing coming in from a very impactful 10, but Johnny Sexton, I think, made himself an enigma in his own right, and he's in a separate category. So to follow in that and to have a young man come in and try things and to own it and to never shy away from continuing to play, I think that was huge. So I think the evolution is that they just started from where they left off in the World Cup. It was disappointing. And they tried some new things, and their clarity and sticking to the game plan and never giving up is something that, you know, I admired. And I think Calvin Nash has been a standout for me as well. The poor chap at times, watching him definitely against Wales and Italy and even there the weekend, you know, at times, you know, it's a lonely place, I would think, on the wing if you're not getting ball. And then when, you know, he was always so solid under high ball or getting it, you know, when he took his opportunity, he took it very well. So I thought he was standout. So I think, I suppose, the evolution is all these players have, we spoke about provincially, you know, lighting up the place, and you would expect this transitionary period for all these young players, but there was no transitionary period. And I think that's been the evolution, that they just slotted seamlessly in and continued on the same trajectory they've been in. So
how will the players feel after this championship win? Will it linger with them, do you think, James, that they didn't win the Grand Slam?
Probably for 24 hours, and you've got to get over it pretty quickly, you know. And I think they probably dealt with that after the England game. I think you have to bounce back so quickly. You have another game to play against Scotland, and obviously they're over that. Look, it's so hard. Ultimately, it's so hard to win in Six Nations, you know. We haven't done it as often as we would have liked. I think we've been, as I say, mentioned a lot tonight, we've been spoiled so much in the last decade or so in terms of wins. So, look, it's what an amazing thing to get another Six Nations title. So I don't think they'll be too worried about getting a Grand Slam in a few years, forgotten about it, really, and just trying to keep on emulating and keep on developing. Exactly. Look, and ultimately, when you finish, that's what it's about, having medals. And Grand Slams are great, yeah, but Six Nations titles are as good.
I'd say they're still out having on the Guinness now with the medals around their necks.
And why not?
And why not? You know, we can sit here and say that, you know, when you're a champion, you think, oh yeah, in that moment, like, it's a great feeling, you want to, you know, it'll come around again. For some people, it never does. Like, some people will never win a championship. So, do you know, when you look at successful teams, and we're so proud of this team, and yeah, we get selfish and we get greedy and we expect more from them because that's what we want, because we know how good they are. But same time, being on the other side as players, it is so hard to be consistent and to get over the line and to win that gold medal around your neck, you know. Lots of times you're there, thereabouts, but you never get to wear it. So,
what will this Six Nations, do you think, be remembered for? For me, it's for Italy.
Definitely Italy. And I suppose starting off, we thought it was a done deal exactly who was, but towards the end, it's kind of, someone took up the script and absolutely ripped it up, put it in the shredder, and like, you didn't know where it was going to happen. But certainly, I think standout was the Italians. And I think, do you know what? I hope they're not a flash in the pan. I hope they go and do big things, and I hope they take a few more scalps in the URC and maybe Europe, we'll see.
How do you reflect on the competition, James?
Yeah, it's a pretty successful one, wasn't it? Like, you know, and I completely agree with Lindsay as well, and it's the it's the Italians, isn't it, that really stood out. And it's the consistency again shown from Benetton in the URC, and if you can get wins under your belt, look, winning's a habit as well, and you got to get used to winning. But I agree as well, you got to enjoy your wins as well, and because you're not going to win every week, so it's about being that consistent side. So Italy, for me, consistency is what we can see. Wales, hopefully develop. France, just
being typically France.
Well, they're never going to change, and you don't want that. And that's the beauty of the Six Nations, that I'm sure probably no one got that Six Nations table right. You know, who knows where it's going to end up. Everyone's capable of beating everyone on any given day, and that's where you want it.
Before we finish up, the Women's Six Nations kicks off this weekend, Lindsay. No easy task. Ireland have France and England away. Their first championship under Scott Beamond. What are you expecting? First weekend up first against France.
No one wants to go away. They're going away to Le Mans to play France. You certainly don't want that, especially the French on home soil, whatever about them coming here to Ireland. But look, what I expect for this team is that we build on last year. Unfortunately, we were the wooden spoon for the first time, I think, since 2004. Not ideal, but the thing is, we want to definitely get two wins minimum, for me, would be what we expect. And there's been good chat about Scott and his training sessions and what he's done. The girls have had I'm not sure about the quality of matches, but certainly they've gotten good standard. They've been together, which is the most important thing. They've been in the training environment together with the Celtic Challenge with their respective teams. Anyone who's obviously been contracted has been in the HPC. So there's been a lot of hard work done. I'm sure a lot of soul searching from this time 12 months ago. And that was always going to be expected. We were the Wales of last year in the sense of we were really starting afresh, and we had a lot of young talented players who were just inexperienced at test level rugby. So what I expect is, whatever about the result against away from France, I expect us to have a performance, you know, and that would be like definitely heartwarming for me, and especially for the girls who put in an awful lot of work. It's very hard when you know how hard you're working to go out and not have the results reflect that. So if we can come away, no injuries from France, you know, because we've a lot of injuries after Celtic Challenge anyway from a lot of key players, if I'm hearing right. So we'll see what the team announcement is during the week. But definitely when they come home the following week to Italy in the RDS, I hope everyone will put bums on seats for all three home games, and we get a win against Italy. Hopefully Wales and Scotland as well. But Wales and Scotland have both played in much higher tiers in the in the new WXV competition. So again, you don't know where you're at till you're in your first round. But look, we'll definitely know where we are after France and make the changes necessary to get a win against Italy.
What would a successful Six Nations look like for this group results-wise?
Oh, I think definitely 5 performances, but minimum 2 wins. I would hope to be successful. I know you kind of go from 0 wins last year to thinking, oh, 1 would be thing. But I think there's a lot of work, there's a lot of talent there, and if we can get that clicking. Mm-hmm. I think 2 wins minimum would be, I'd be very happy to see. And I think they would, for them as well, it's nothing about me or anything else on the outside. It's for those players to keep them interested and other work is done. And as I said, Scott comes in with a lot of experience from his 8 years with England as the attack coach there. So, and he's obviously an ex-pro himself. So there's a lot of good players, good staff there, and I would hope they'd get their just rewards.
And as you said, we hope that they get bums on seats and bums home crowds supporting
people.
Them.
Yeah,
they're and playing. A couple of wins along the way as well.
Yeah, I think 31st is Italy at home. Then they go to Musgrave for the weekend, the 13th of April against Wales. And then it'll be up to Kingspan on the 27th against Scotland. So yeah, if you're around, get your bum there.
Well, we'll leave it there for today's show. My thanks to James and to Lindsay. It was an entertaining Six Nations and Ireland are top of the pile once again. That's the end of House of Rugby for a while. We'll be back with you again at another time. But thanks for joining us over the past couple of months. Until the next time, from all of us here, Slán go fóill.
Sports Show presents House of Rugby.